Muhammad, Disc 5.
At about the same time, Muhammad's new father-in-law, Abu Bara, chief of the Bedouin tribe of Amir, asked for help against warring factions in his own tribe. 40 Muslims were dispatched, and nearly all of them were massacred just outside Amir's territory by members of the tribe of Sulaym. When one of the Muslim survivors came across two Amiris lying peacefully asleep under a tree, he killed them, assuming that their tribe had been responsible for the killing and taking revenge in the traditional fashion. When he returned to Medina, Muhammad told him that he had done wrong. But the tradition of retaliation was so deeply ingrained in Arabia that it was nearly impossible to eradicate. Muhammad insisted on paying the usual compensation to Abu Bara. His willingness to do so, in spite of the fact that the crime had technically been committed by tribesmen of Sulaym, made some of the Bedouin more kindly disposed towards the Muslim community. Some of the Sulaymites had been so impressed by the courage of their Muslim victims that they entered Islam themselves. Muhammad's position in Medina remained precarious, and he could not afford to drop his guard. When he called upon the Jewish tribe of Nadir to collect the blood money for Amir, he narrowly escaped an assassination attempt. Some members of Nadir had planned to drop a boulder on the Prophet from a nearby rooftop. Ibn Ubay had promised to support them, and they probably assumed that Muhammad had been so discredited by Uhud that the Medinese would rally behind them. So they were astonished to receive a grim message from their former ally, the tribe of Aus. They had broken their treaty with the Prophet and could no longer remain in the city. Like Kainuka before them, the Nadiris withdrew to their fortress and waited for their allies to relieve them. But again, no help was forthcoming. Even the powerful Jewish tribe of Quraiza, which was also hostile to Muhammad, told them that they were on their own. After 2 weeks, Nadir knew that they could no longer sustain the siege, and when Muhammad gave the order to cut down their palm trees, an unmistakable sign of war in Arabia, they surrendered, begging only that their lives be spared. Muhammad agreed, on condition that they left the oasis immediately, taking with them only those goods that they could carry on their camels. So Nadir packed up their possessions, even taking down the lintels of their doors rather than leave them to Muhammad, and left Medina in a proud procession as though they were going in triumph. The women dressed in all their jewels and finery, beating tambourines and singing to the accompaniment of pipes and drums. Weaving their way through the orchards and hamlets of the oasis, they finally took the road to Syria, though some stayed in the nearby Jewish settlement of Khaybar, where they helped Abu Sufyan build his confederacy against the Muslims by drumming up support among the northern tribes. In the space of 2 short years, Muhammad had expelled 2 powerful tribes from Medina, and the Muslims now managed the market vacated by Kainuka. As we have seen, this was not Muhammad's intention. He had wanted to cut the cycle of violence and dispossession, not continue it. Muhammad had shown that he was still a man to be reckoned with, but he must also have reflected on the moral and political sterility of this type of success, because Nadir remained just as much of a threat in nearby Khaybar.